are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled with friends. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep. Keep us selfish. Keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Joining me, we are at Toward Anarchy on the social media, wherever it is, and wherever you find me, wherever you're listening to the show today, click, tap, or smash that like button, whatever you have to do to get it to respond to you, do it now. It's the biggest, easiest, simplest way to support me, and of course, you can always visit me. If you're ever in Topeka, Kansas, come visit the comic book shop, Amazing Fantasies, here, and as always, everything that we do starts at towardanarchy.com. You can find me there, and you can find me at Toward Anarchy on the social media, you know, the Facebook and the X and the Instagram, and I think that's about it. I think I don't know if I have any more or not. I may be in a whole bunch of places that I don't know about, but those are the ones I officially recognize. And if you go to towardanarchy.com and you look for episode 2615, you will be right on board with me, and there'll be some links there and things, you know, if you're interested in my author. You'll be able to get to her website from there, and I'm excited. This was really cool. This is one of these conversations I jumped into really, really quickly. You know that I'm on the Podmatch system. I talk about it. Any number of the people that we interview here are found on Podmatch, and it's just been really something I've been happy to be a part of all this time. And I just come across these amazing people, and they will send me a little contact information, and they'll talk about their things and what they're doing, and sometimes it just blows my mind what they're up to. And sometimes you're like, okay, yeah, let's have that conversation now, let's not wait. And when Michelle Stiles reached out to me, that was my first thought. Let's talk about this. Let me give you an idea. So she's an author, right? This is the book that got my attention. I haven't read it yet. You guys know that happens often, that I haven't read the books when I talk to the people. One Idea to Rule Them All, Reverse Engineering America Propaganda, book one of a trilogy. Now, this is, obviously, this is right up my alley, right? So as soon as I saw that, I said, yes, let's have this conversation with Michelle. SmartSheep.com. It's SmartSheep.com. If you like what you hear and you want to know more about Michelle, that is her website. And, of course, that'll be at towardanarchy.com. It's episode 2615. Michelle, thank you so much for joining me. We had some technical issues trying to get connected, but I think we're rolling now. So I'm really excited to get a chance to talk to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's fate. We got through the technology, right? And so I'm supposed to be here, and we're going to have a great talk. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Obviously you've done some other things, and let me mention some of those. You are an author, and this is quite the title here. Fast Track Your Recovery from a Total Knee Replacement, How to Eliminate Pain and Pain Medicine the Quickest Way Possible. That's just one title. and then also Color and Laugh Your Way to Knee Replacement Recovery. So I'm guessing you know something about knee replacement. Why don't you give me the brief on that?
Well, my background is physical therapy. So I worked with a really good group in Virginia, and we were just cranking them out and learned a lot of things from the surgeon himself. He was a great guy. I don't think they make those kind of guys anymore, you know, real paternalistic in terms of his outcomes. And anyway, so I just put this little book up, and it's done remarkably well over, it's got to be over 10 years now. And then the coloring book is just based on my Irish humor. And, you know, you see things up close, and you can poke a little fun at them. And so people really like it as a gift item, you know what I mean? Instead of giving somebody chocolate or flowers or something, you know, they have a friend that's had a knee replacement, and so they just give them this coloring book so they can have a smile on their face while they're you know, eliminating pain with my other book.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think that's a great thing. There are some still out there. There are a few.
Yeah.
A lot of the doctors with the Free Market Medical Association. I talk. I have a regular conversation with a man named Dr. Dean Lloyd. And while he is not a surgeon, he's a homeopath and allopath. But his attention, and I think a lot of their attention now, is toward, you know, sort of individual care, turning away from this medical system and the troubles from it. I mean, and not just because it has troubles, because it itself is troubling. So yeah, it's really great when you can introduce people to ideas like that. That's really cool. And so, not a personal thing though. You didn't have to go through the pain yourself. It's just all the experience you've had with other people going through it. Well, that's good. That's one of the, I remember, what is it, the cover of an album from the mid-late 90s. I can't think of who it is, but it's a knee surgery. That's the cover of the album. It just shows the sort of brace holding the knee and then split open, and it's just, that's an album cover. Metalheads. So how do you go from being a physical therapist? Right. Go ahead. You already know.
Bring it on.
Tell me.
No, it's not sort of a progression, but yet I'm just a secret truth, and like, you know, many people out here, right, asking questions and seeing the political things. But I started this around 2008. I saw, you know, Barack Obama rising, and I thought, you know, in any real world that, I mean, regardless of what his skin color is or whatever, I go, well, you should have more, if you're going to be quote unquote leader of the free world, you should have more experience, right? He was a junior senator, right? And it just seemed like, wait a minute, are we just putting these people in as like, you know, sock puppets? And I've never been a political person. I'd never really wanted to watch politics, and maybe I was sleeping in social studies class. I don't know. But, that just kind of struck me, along with seeing some a power grab locally in my area. And it was like, wow, you know, like if it's this evil here, you know what I mean? Like if there's a power grab for such a small anthill, what is it in Washington, right? I can't, you know, because they go to the biggest hill first, right? The power, you know, goes upstream. And I just, you know what? I am gonna start researching propaganda, and you know, so maybe as a divine inspiration, I don't know, but so I just started reading, and I went to Creole, I went to Bernays Lippmann, that was right around, you know, World War, and of course Creole is the head of the Committee on Public Information, right? And he wrote How We Advertised America. Are you familiar with that book? Yeah. Okay. So he's just doing a victory lap, right? And it just smacks you in the face. He goes, oh, so the greatest sales job in the entire world. He says that, you know what I mean? I'm paraphrasing, but in other words, he's, you know, and you know, you think, wait a minute, shouldn't you either have good reasons for going to war or not? Right. And, you know, selling a war just really seems offensive. And I'm reading this, and then I'm, you know, of course, reading Bernays and Lippmann alongside of it. But then Lippmann is totally trashing democracy. It can't work. People are too stupid. You know what I mean? They can't possibly know enough about the complex environment that we live in. And so, you know, we need to manage the news for the people, so they can make sense of it, right? That's kind of the argument he's making in public opinion. And so, you know, all three of those things, I just started talking to people, and I go, do you know this? Did you know that we censored people in World War I? I was just waking up to like our own history. And I thought it was profoundly interesting, and that it made sense to sort of track it. And, you know, my efficacy for writing a book like that was fairly low. And whoever said, anything doing is worth doing poorly was a genius. Okay. Because the first book I wrote in 2018 was like, oh, it was okay. You know, and it was the bones of it. And I thought, well, at least, you know, like maybe moms and stuff, homeschoolers could use it to teach this as a framework for their kids. Cause it, really we don't even teach this at all in our own history. Now they teach the fallacies as a antidote to propaganda, which is utterly useless because it's not reason that they're speaking to, right? They're bypassing reason. And anyway, so I thought, then between 2018 and 2020, when the COVID hit, I realized between then, a lot of the flesh started filling in on the book, right? I go, well, I got to add that story and this. And it, so it rounded out to be a fairly decent book. And I thought, well, I got to write this. And I'm working and doing it, you know, on part time. And then, you know, how some things happen. You know, my mom passed away in 22, and it was one of those things like, I'm doing it, I'm finishing it, getting it out. And I did get it out in the fall of that year. And so that was kind of the genesis of the first book. And, you know, I just, things just as I see them and I study them, I've just gone way deep in a lot of the books around the turn of the century. The next book is called Masters of Illusion, The Rise of Corporate Social Control. So that's going to take us back into the 1800s and follow a number of different paths. So anyways, that's how my synthesis has been in terms of you know, following, pulling on strings, Michael, pulling on strings. That's all it is, saying like, wait a minute, you know, what is this? I got to know deeper. And then, you know, because it's insane out there. It's crazy, right? Your audience knows that. It's nuts. Trying to parse that together, right? And if you go back in history, it becomes, you see patterns and principles. You see economic power. You see the rise of just the communications reach, right? Like the penny press was huge. In 1833, rural communities were pretty much isolated. Right. They didn't, you know, guy rides through and everybody goes, oh, the news, you know, and runs out to greet him. But pretty much they're isolated and self-containing. And that means they're conservative. Right. Because indigenous people, tribal people, they tend to remain the same for considerable length of time. When you start to have outside influences, it starts to crack that walnut. And the penny press was, well, press in general, the newspaper was 6 cents a page up until the penny press, which of course put it down to 1 cent a day. And every man could buy that then. And so all of a sudden, you know, the reach extends in the cities. And at the same time, the railroads are crisscrossing the United States. And so now, boom, these major dailies are going all across the U.S. And they're being picked up by Mr. Everyman. And so that starts the rise of advertising and commercial society. And so, and that reach is profound because before that, if I speak, it's people in the sound of my voice, you know what I mean? That can hear me and be influenced. Or maybe a small town newspaper, you know, okay, cities, we're doing it, but now we're talking nationwide, right? And then magazines come along late 1800, that's reaching a different audience. So it's so those kinds of things, stacking those together, right? I mentioned history, I mentioned economics, I mentioned the communication structure, the relational piece, which everyone picks up as propaganda, right? How language influences you. That's relational, how I can manipulate you, okay? And then the final piece of that framework is the selling machine that they created. Okay. And, it's different. It's how you put all these pieces together to manipulate opinion and control society. And they were putting really unique things together at the turn of the century, that I track in my second book. So anyways, I'll shut up and let you get.
Well, basically, you're saying they've been at it for a long time, and they do a pretty good job of it. They know what they're doing. So, if you're surprised today that there's a fog of war or lack of understanding with a general, we'll not even call him an idiot, just the average person, it's no wonder why, because they've spent a great deal of time putting themselves in a position to be able to control this information and the flow of this information. And it was still kind of a wild space, a Wild West space, even even into when I first started in communications, because it wasn't centralized yet. It was just getting to the point where the mega corporations, the mega communications corporations were starting to buy everything up, every little station around the nation. They were all Cumulus or something, you know, so everybody owned them. And that was only just beginning. They were only just starting to consolidate, and it would be another 2 or 3 years before they actually came in and took control of the radio stations and the television stations by installing the emergency alert system. Before that, it was the emergency broadcast system. It was all of it was compulsory, but you just complied with it. You just did it when they aired. You flipped the switch on and let them air their emergency information. Whereas this changed everything. It was actual electronics in the studio that took over the airwaves and broadcast whatever they wanted to broadcast. So even in my time, it's not been complete, but it has been completed in my time. There's no bit of information that they can't control. Whether they do choose to or not is a different story. But
right. But this ends up bringing up a really central, important point in the idea of free speech, right? Because if I have like reach costs money. Okay. If I want to advertise in a newspaper, right. If I want to own a newspaper, if I want to buy social media now, if I want to, you know, you have to, if I want to put up a website, but you have to market it, right. It just doesn't get traffic for free. And same thing with radio, a platform and TV. And so they don't mind if minor voices, because yeah, you can't pick up a big enough following. And if they don't, it's like a bazooka on the hill. You know what I mean? Like if they don't want you on that stage, you know, they can invite you up or they can keep you out. And, if you do manage to scrabble your way up to the base of the stage and you're trying to make, you know what I mean? They can just train negativity on you, right? They did that at the early turn of the century with the real reformers, like, Bob La Follette from Wisconsin. And I mean, he was an anarchist. He was a radical. He was a socialist. And, you know, they do the same thing now. I mean, yeah, they have their pet names that they demonize people and they're not to be listened to. They're the unsophisticated of society and you don't have to hear them actually. So, you know, you go, well, when that disparity, that power disparity in reach comes into play, you and me, you know, like you can have a free, you know, we have a piece of paper that says we have free speech. But we don't have equal speech. I mean, and then add front groups to that, right? Michael, add front groups, you know, where they just, you know, buy an organization and put it out there and it looks neutral, but the money behind it is totally something else, right? They called it the National Citizens League for the Promotion of Sound Banking. Have you heard of that? No, no, most people haven't, but that was one of the things that the bankers used to sell the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. And they did it. They started it in 1911. And they basically said, no one's going to listen to us because we're hated. Wall Street was hated at that point and very, they weren't trusted. And so they said, but they still trust Midwestern bankers. So they made this group that we only Midwestern bankers, and they put like $500,000 in it, but of course it's funded by Wall Street. And, they spread the gospel and they use that word, the gospel of sound banking. So, I mean, you know, and again, that's expensive speech that looks neutral, right? It looks like the self-interest is wiped away off of there. Right. And so, you know, but it ends up influencing a lot of people because they think it's okay. Right, they think it's coming from a neutral, unbiased source. Is that noise? Can you hear that?
Yeah, there was something there, huh?
It was my AC kicking on. Do you want me to turn it on?
What a nabs, nothing. No.
Can you cut it out?
I thought maybe it was something on the other side of my door, but no, it's fine.
No, okay.
It didn't. It was no biggie. I just heard it was all.
Okay.
And I'm just hyper aware of everything that's going on around me anyway, because it's so quiet. No problem. Wow. there's a lot here, because that control and of information is key to everything that they're able to do, and we're experiencing it right now. It's been a very interesting thing to see. This is the first time that America has got to deal with a lot of this, like the drones, the small drones. Obviously, we've had the big weapons of war drones for some time now, but the smaller drones, this is the first time that we've got into combat and been involved with that happening. And so there's something interesting going on there, because part of the problem with the drones is that they're not like, they're not like giant military aircraft or boats that you see sort of flying overhead, or troops that you see coming at you wearing an American flag. They can have any flag on them. You don't know where they're coming from. They can be used against us. They can be used by us against us. They can be used by individuals. A guy with a backpack can fill a backpack full of these things. And, I mean, take out an entire building, entire neighborhood, entire city with the thing, depending on how weaponized the things are and how controlled they are. They've been trying to build our own troops to be able to do these sorts of things with these types of weapons for years. And the fog of war that surrounds everything, the fog of war is already a real thing, but now we have this sort of fog of war with controlled information and total controlled information. There's nothing left anymore. If you are just a normal person and you don't understand that there are other resources for information, and you get your information from CNN, Fox, any, name them, MSN, any, it just doesn't, it doesn't matter. If you're getting your information from mainstream, even PBS, mainstream radio or television, you have no clue what's going on in the world. I believe those people probably have a hard time putting their shoes on every day, because they're completely, how would they understand the world? When I go look at the news, I give you an example, because all I do is I try to stay, because of the algorithm, right? It's almost impossible to get information without the algorithm interfering with it. And you manipulate the algorithm every time you give a like or a dislike or something. And so I just try to stay dispassionate from it. Here's the places that I want to see information from, all these different places around the world. I'll stay away from the likes and the dislikes so that it just keeps giving me what it thinks it wants to give me, not what I think I want it to give me. And so I try to imagine looking at the world through the eyes of one sort of left-leaning person or right-leaning person to see what they're seeing, and then notice what the other one isn't seeing, and imagine, because I will see the same headline, the same story used by the right or the left completely differently. The same language, the same numbers, the same thing they're talking about, but one just gives an opinion that it's a bad thing, the other just gives an opinion that it's a good thing, and nobody really talks about why it exists at all or why we even have to have this thing.
Yeah, it's almost like, too, though, I think some of them are similarly worded. But then there's others that almost like the facts are different, right? Like, remember when Dodge was happening, it was like, they're accessing the database over here and they're not accessing the database over here. Of course they're not. And then of course they are, right? And who knew, right? Who could tell, really? So it becomes, you know, I like to, here's another thing that's an issue is, right? It was 1996 that Fox News was created. Okay, and so before then, we had everybody essentially drinking from the same stream, right? So they go to mainstream media for most of their news, and it's tacking leftward, okay, for a while. And so the right is getting disaffected, saying, well, it's not addressing our issues, leading to the perfect scenario where Fox News kind of breaks off from the mainstream, right? Now you have two streams, right? And they've just allowed those two streams to keep getting like this. And so now the distance is this far, and it's like, I call it the bifurcation of the American mind, right? I mean, now you have, like, and of course, the Civil War idea, right? And you have people that are in the same family that can't sit down at Thanksgiving and have a conversation because it's like, well, you get your facts over here or your ideas. We get our facts over here. And they're like, we can't even talk to each other anymore. And so it's, I think it's intentional. You know, I think they knew exactly what they were doing, driving that wedge into the culture where, you know, if you can't agree on the basic facts of what's happening in the country, right, you know, you're not going to be able to, you can't be united, right? It's difficult.
Well, it creates two states. It creates a state of unknowing, which creates a state of fear, or it creates a state of fear, either one. But they both end up in the same place, and you have people who are paralyzed, unable to do anything, because that's the one thing they always leave out is about the human response. They say fight or flight, but the actual thing that most do is freeze, and that's what most people have done. They're frozen in their lives. They're frozen in this division, and they have no way.
Yeah.
They have no concept of even how to get out of it because they don't really have a concept of what their life could be like without it. They don't understand that they are controlled and that everything about that their reality is contrived and that it's completely different when you step outside of it.
Yeah. I mean, right. So you got the left going, it's the right wing neo-Nazi, you know, fascist bigots, you know, and then the right is pointing back to the cultural Marxist, you know, deviants, whatever, you know, whatever they want to point at. And it's like, okay, so those two are the enemies, but, you know, like, and then the real thief is, you know, getting away with murder, not being, you know, it doesn't have the enemy planted on his head, right? And so these two are, you know, almost at war with each other. And yeah, we're in trouble. And it's really hard, really hard to talk to people. For the most part, I really gravitate toward people who are questioning, you know, I mean, they see the noise, they see the hatefulness, really, especially since COVID, right? That really drove the wedge there. And it's not getting any better. And so if they're disaffected with that, you know, I can have a conversation with them. But if they're just spewing talking points from either side, I just, you know there's more to it. You know, you really got to look at history and move on because you can't, they're just, until something happens in their, like, frame of the world, like, okay, like, for me, something doesn't fit in the little frame that I have about the world, and I need to ask more questions because, you know, how I've been looking at things is not right anymore, and, you know, until somebody comes to that conclusion, it's pretty hard to have a dialogue with them.
Well, that's that Overton window view, right? It's controlled for them. That's the thing about it. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of the Overton window is that this is it for most people these days. It's this thing right here. And while this is just as good as any technology or just as bad as any technology, the fact is it's used against us. It's weaponized against us. All this information and these tools are weaponized against us. Everything is turned into an opportunity to either create dollars for somebody or to create votes for somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's any wonder that it continues to even happen. It's real weird because we have these things that happen throughout society, pop culture events and things like that, or world events that will bring attention and people will, they'll get a sense of clarity for this very short period of time. Unfortunately, I think it's like 45 minutes, and I'm kind of serious about that. It's about the length of a sort of average comedy show. Right, because if you look at pop culture in particular, comedy, you look at somebody like George Carlin or any number of people in and around that sort of conversation that was being had 50 years ago, or even before that. It seems like everybody's paying attention, but they're only paying attention for the 45 minutes that the show is being put on. After that, they forget what it was all about. They forget the important part. All they remember was the F-bombs and the curse words that you can't say on television. That's what they remember. They don't remember the important parts about it's a gang and you're not in it, you know. It's a club,
right?
And you're not invited, and all the things like that. Those things, everybody cheers those ideas another example is the, you know, the Star Wars, the rebellion against the corrupt criminal system, and everybody cheers them in the movie, but then they go back to supporting the corrupt criminal system as if it doesn't mirror it, as if it's not art imitating life and telling you, yoo-hoo, this, we're not talking about the British Empire right. over here, we're talking about what's going on today.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to break through, right? I mean, it's the education system. You know, people don't read. They can't follow arguments for a considerable length of time. I was kind of horrified to see that they're really not making kids read full-length books. They you know, are giving them, like, portions, book portions. And, you know, it's not good, you know. It's something that parents have to do something about. You know, they can't expect the system to correct itself, because they want us to be soundbite driven. They want us like monkeys trained. Like, it's like social media is like brain crack. You know what I mean? When, oh, here's a cute little monkey. Oh, here. And, you know, before you know it, half an hour of your life that you can never get back has been spent just scrolling some mindless, idiotic thing that they have the algorithm for, right? And
if
so.
Only half an hour. I see people burning off time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just going. And you know, that's not to say that it's necessarily all bad, but it's the constant distraction. It's the totality of the distraction, not the individual distractions themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I'm like really anti text message. I don't give people the ability to just knock me on the shoulder at any time and say, I want an answer. Like, it's so distracting, you know?
I've been trying
especially to... Especially when you get older and you have to have readers.
Yeah, right. They're not as easy.
And you have to go, oh, I can't see. And you know what I mean? And it's like, look, email me. Like, there isn't most things that a friend can't just email you and that I can respond to later. You don't need an immediate answer. And it causes all kinds of friction with people. Why didn't you answer me back? Well, you know what I mean? I was busy. I have a life. I'm not.
Yeah, I make it real clear these days anymore to anyone and everyone, and here in front of this audience as well, across the network, everyone. My phone doesn't beckon me.
Yeah.
The notifications, that kind of none of that. No program tells me it's time to check. It doesn't tell me I just got a new text from so-and-so. It doesn't tell me that somebody liked my post on Facebook or Instagram. None of that. And I'm actually somebody who uses those things in a way to market myself. But I don't let this thing control me.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that I go and browse it when I browse it. I will not have it tell me that it's time to start browsing. Not even my favorite video game.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Oh, it's just one of those simple little things that you can do to try to set yourself free from unnecessary things tying you down, always trying to get your attention away from whatever it is that you're doing. There's no reason for it. There's no need for it. There's nothing coming through this that isn't somebody trying to call me in emergency that I'm going to answer, because that's what the thing is for, that I need to respond to. If you felt that it was good enough to send me a text in a nice casual text conversation, then you should feel that you can wait for a while for me to respond.
Yeah, we've just, you know, it's hard to imagine that these really have only really been around since the turn of the century.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Not
it
even
feels
that
like
long,
we've lived
really.
With
these things like this. I mean, 2007.
Okay, yeah. No, it's hard to believe that we grew up without them. I mean, you know, like, I go back and I think of that. I'd go back to that any day, myself. You know what I mean? Even with
I wouldn't miss it. I don't think I would. I don't know why I would, because it doesn't dictate my life. Unless so many other people do, though. Someone wouldn't give it up, right? Offer them the $1 million to give it up for 5 days or something like that, and they couldn't do it. You just leave it right in front of them, leave the text on, all the notifications on, and so you can't touch it, can't move. You can eat, you can get up and go to the bathroom, but that phone's going to be sitting there beckoning you the whole time.
Yeah. So, I mean, So, you know, here and here's a, like going back to what we were talking about a little earlier with the facts versus like I read Le Bon, which I'm sure the crowd of Study of the Popular Mind, you know about Gustave Le Bon. He's a Frenchman who wrote that book at the turn of the 1900s or going into. And so anyways, he basically says, we're not using facts and reason. Okay. And this is really important for your audience to remember. And I created something that I call the infrastructure of belief. And it's a way to kind of shortcut. It's, you know, it's hackable humans, right? How can we get you to do what we want you to do? And it's just if you think of a number five dice, okay, you have experience in the middle, you have authority at one bottom, social pressure at the other, okay, culture and language up at the top, all right? And they're like knobs on a dial, if you will, just to kind of make it easier. But, of course, authorities, they're constantly seeding authorities into the realm that you are aware of. And that's where you talked about the algorithm, okay? So the authorities that speak to the left aren't the authorities that speak to the right, right? But they want to make sure that they kind of own those authorities so they can steer you where you want. Because they know that we're sheep. We look for a leader. We look for somebody with experience. And I mean, quite honestly, in many cases today, like just look at the vaccine, whole COVID thing. Who could really know virology, right? So you had to look to somebody who you trusted, right? So, and then, of course, social pressure is just that herd mentality. Like, if I can't figure it out between my own experience, between an authority, I'm just going to kind of look around and go, where's everybody going? And if 90% of the people are going here, I'm just going to go here, right? Because, you know, or like run, yell fire in a movie theater, right? And everybody just moves and I'm going to move with them. I'm not going to think about it until later, right? It's that whole protective, I'm going to stay with the herd, right? And so those three dials, and experience, of course, can be manipulated, right? Bernays wrote about this. Do you understand, or are you familiar with his term of stagecraft? He used the term stagecraft. So so it's basically making news. Like, I'm going to make the news for you instead of report news. So he had his, you know, the Torches of Freedom campaign that he did for Philip Morris. He had his secretary and a couple of the young ladies march in the, I think it was Macy's Day Parade. And then they get to a certain point, he had all the reporters there, and they were going to roll up their skirts, take cigarettes out of their garter, and light up what they called, euphemistically termed, Torches of Freedom. And it was sold as equality with men, right? The women now wanted it because, you know, at that time, you were a bad woman. You know, you were on the dark side if you were smoking, and respectable women did not light up. So he had been contracted by Philip Morris to sell cigarettes to women. And so this was stagecraft. This was, you know, this is an inorganic, made to look authentic, of a clamoring for women to want to smoke, which wasn't actually true, right? There was no one doing that except for him. So that's where experience can be manipulated, right? Because you see that, or it was in the paper, right? It's reported on, and you think, oh, you know, people want to smoke, right? They want to smoke. He also said in that same book, the propaganda book, he said, okay, the politician of tomorrow is no longer going to sell, like speak to you about tariffs. Okay. He goes, what's going to happen is the world around you is going to be filled with this lesson, right? So for example, before the president speaks on it, they're going to have men of prominence go to this important function in, like, if they want to change the wool tariffs, they're going to boycott wool. So they're going to wear cotton suits to this important function. And that's going to get broadcast. It's phony, right? It's made as part of this campaign. Somewhere else, they're going to be reporting, or they're going to do a survey on how, not having wool, affordable wool products is hurting the poor. Okay. And over here, you're going to have some middle-class people, boycotting, wool because of the high prices for whatever, for their businesses. Okay. So he said, before the leader even speaks on it, these are experiences that people go, oh, this is really real. You know, like seeing is believing with your eyes. Remember that. Seeing is believing, right? Trust your eyes. Okay. Trust the experts and trust what others are doing, right? That's how we're built. And so they hack into that system, right? It's not facts and reason. So they manipulate experiences around you with PR. Okay. They put the authorities they want you to believe into the system, and then they wrap you around with everybody's doing it. And so you should too. Right. And so those are those main kind of pillars that they're constantly using. And so even your side that you've been trained to know and love, you know, they're getting through to you through trusts, not lying. You see what I'm saying? It's different, right? It's not like people, well, I can tell a lie. No, they're setting up the trusts for you to believe, and they're getting through both sides, right? Because these trusts are set up over here for the left, and a similar set of them are set over for the right. And so that's what people really have to realize, because facts and reasons have nothing to do with that, right? And being able to, like, know fallacies, know logical fallacies is actually ridiculous. It's no help. I mean, you know, you should be able to think. You know, we want people to be critical thinkers, okay? But that's not going to help you in this world, because you have to understand that those things are manipulated. And then, of course, the top two are language, which they're always, you know, of course, PR people, that you frame it anti-abortion or pro-life, right? And so how you label something, how you frame it, they're using language all the time, you know, kind of weaponizing it, maybe using it in a way that we don't think, you know, maybe we mean one thing and they mean another, right? And so there's ways that they can manipulate that. And then the culture, of course, they're always seeding things right into, you know, the movies, the things that are around us, the sitcoms, the things that they're normalizing. So, you know, putting into the schools and socializing. So you have all those things, you know, that I call the infrastructure of belief, that are helping you, you know, decide on any particular given item that comes up in front of you during the day. Does that make sense? Is that helpful?
No, absolutely. I think that's a very, I think that's a pretty clear explanation of it. In fact, I think it works. I like the idea of the sort of knobs and sort of turning.
I don't know if you can see this. Can you see it?
Pretty well what I was sort of, that's pretty well what I was sort of envisioning. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So it's a way I can send this to you if you want to put it up in the thing. But you know, it's a simple framework to go, oh, you know what I mean. And again, parents, we need to be teaching kids this, because it's not getting, you know, you and I lived a significant portion of our life without this phone or without a computer, and the kids are, you know, being indoctrinated from this since, you know, the time they can hold it and use it, or the parents give it to them. And so they have to understand what's being done, so that they're just sheep following along. And, you know, so that's why the first book I created with a study guide, actually, so that parents could sit down with their kids and really go through this, take 12 lessons, or, you know, do some extra, even if you're not homeschooling, you could certainly do this as a extra topic, and then help your kids start to navigate this world. Because it's, even if you understand and you're not being manipulated, how do you teach your kids? It's hard to just say that one's right, that one's not. Well, why? Well, you know, you've got this experience, you don't even know how to actually maybe explain it to them. You know, why you think this, it's just life experience, but you got to have a way, you know, because these kids are really up against it.
Yeah. It's been, it's an interesting struggle. I have children that range from 14 to 25 now, and so I'm still going through it in some sense, but I've had two of them come out the other side of it, at least that propaganda side of it, through the manipulations of the public school system, and they came out on top of it all, and they went through all the same things, and you know, this sort of social manipulations and these yeah, we could go on and on about the weird things that are going on in the schools. My wife was a teacher for a while, and so we have sort of some inside baseball understanding of that system, not just somebody who sat on the outside of it and gone, geez, that thing is really screwed up. No, we've sort of sat on the inside of it and gone, geez, that thing is really, really screwed up.
Yeah, that's a good seat to have, right? Because you can really get the actual perspective of...
Well, and it's the bottom of the but not the bottom of the barrel, but it's the baseline, right? It's where it's all starting, and you watch them manipulating it and pushing it back further and further, and the children are younger, and they're giving more reason through the manipulations of the economy and through the social manipulations to get women to go into jobs and leave the kids, and you know, it's just... It's everywhere. It's that beginning space right there, and mm-hmm. and it continues through it. I don't know how my children that have gone through it came through it as well as they did, other than just having a not a cynical father, but a father who's paying attention and who is, you know, cynical.
Well, you're engaging them, you know, and obviously you were, you know, and you're taking life as it comes and navigating it with them, you know. But a lot of parents, they're not doing a lot of dialogue with their kids, you know, and so in that case, they really are vulnerable, you know. But good for you, you know, you felt like you got it, you got them at least half of your crew through.
Yeah, no, it's not that hard. Because it really truly is about the engagement of the adults. I don't want to sit here and tell people that it's easy, because obviously everybody's situation is different. But generally speaking, the average person should be able to raise their children simply by just paying attention to them and talking with them on a fairly regular basis, and just letting them know. Even if they go back to the bedroom and lock themselves back there for you know, a couple years or whatever it is during, that they know that you're still out there, and that if they need something, they can come to you, and to show up for the things when they get interested in something. Show up for it. It doesn't matter what else you have to do. You need to show up for that and show that you support them in their interests and in them finding other things to do. And you don't be judgmental about it. You tell them when they've done something right or wrong, but those should be pretty simple, because you've been telling them that since they're a child. Keep your hands to yourself. Keep your hands off of other people's stuff, and we'll be fine. It seemed simple. It seemed simple, but I did it. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of those, you know, sort of unparenting types. You know, I've not put effort into parenting my children. I let my children grow up, and they're very smart. They're very intelligent. They're very respectful of other people and ideas, and they're doing their thing, you know. They're not out there creating a burden, a bigger burden, and those people are everywhere. They just are not capable, and they give up real easy, and a lot of it has to do with the way they're told through the media and through the social media and through the movies, and that they're not good enough if they're not doing things sort of a certain way, or things aren't going their way by a certain period of time, or if you make, you know, the most minimal effort, you should have this great reward. They don't talk about the hard part, the work, what it takes to accomplish things, and what it means to feel good about those things. Obviously, that stuff is out there, but generally speaking, most of what people are bombarded with is just vapid, useless information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know where we go from there. Is that the third book?
No. Well, yeah. No, actually, I mean, like, we have to rebuild the walnut, right? And the walnut is what I call local culture, the influences of local culture. Because if in most cases, you don't really have any local leadership anymore. Forget the politicians. You know what I mean? They're in it for, you know, what, grift or whatever, their own power thing. And they're being, you know, it takes financially a ton of money. So they're supported by the, you know, big business, in other words. And so it doesn't really have anything to do with we the people in the sense. So, but, you know, So who do we have locally anymore that you actually look up to? And so there isn't any local leadership for the most part, unless you're, you know, in a church maybe, or some other organization, or extended family's gone, right? You know, and it's hard work. Like you just said, it's hard work. These things, you know, that gives us resilience to what everybody's saying outside. Like if you want to buck the system, right? If you say, well, I'm not going with this big stream over here, it takes a different type of person, and you got to have some sort of other community around that human being who's going to buck the system to help support them. Right. And, you know, but we really, we've lost it. We don't have civil society anymore. Right. In many cases, it's really gone in local communities.
It's an interesting thing because it's there, but it's not, because it's my argument that what we have in spite of all of the manipulations of government, that everything that's good about America, that's good about the world, that's good about capitalism and our individual cities and communities, is in spite of the theft and the lies and the manipulations and the murders and everything that comes with government, just the total control over it. So while I it's absolutely breaking down, if you let it get to you, the fact is that the only way it is working is down here on the ground between us as individuals. And so that's what we have to salvage, right? Is mm-hmm. to continue to make that work. We cannot let them continue to drive the wedges between us, particularly the political wedge, because the political wedge is ridiculous. It's a silly little thing that means mm-hmm. nothing. Again, you just said it. It's that politics and politicking. It has nothing to do with taking care of community and taking care of your mm-hmm. neighbors. That's what we have to do ourselves down here on the ground. And we've done a really good job of it. It's slipped a little bit more in the last few years. But then again, it hasn't, because I think it's also reflected in the fact that we're seeing this sort of crime is at sort of historic lows. Really. And so that tells me that even while we're still struggling to get along out here in spite of this, that we're finding other ways to get along out here. Mm-hmm. We're making it, because with the collapsing economy, with the way this slow train wreck of an economy that's happening all around the world, certainly with the dollar, as it's happening, we're finding ways to mitigate, and it should be worse, right? It should be much worse than it is. Things should be, I think, much worse than they are, given how bad it is if you look at the individuals. So I think we're still fighting for ourselves and for our communities, but I don't know for how much longer or if it's sustainable.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah. No, I think it has to.
It's going to get better. And we haven't really been tested yet.
No.
I don't think. You know, I mean, marginally, it's things have stayed, you know, decently okay for us. But the leveraging is getting going to get really more severe.
And that's what I see is the slip, right? It's slipping away from us. But the thing about it is we can't stop eating. We can't stop taking care of ourselves, doing the things that we do day to day. So will what we see, I always love the line, even though I don't like to compare movies to real life necessarily, but the Star Wars line, Princess Leia says to Tarkin, the tighter you squeeze your grip, the more galaxies or more systems will slip through your fingers, right? That's what I see. That's the hope that I have, is that as they continue to squeeze, they just push the most, more and more of us out away from what they're squeezing. We just get away. We just walk. It's the squeeze. Well, I don't want to be squeezed. I'm just gonna go over here where there's no squeeze anymore.
That's the problem. Where is there going to be?
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like
tough, right?
Like, you know, when you look at the power structure, like this, I have another. I love little illustrations. I think it helps people. But you know, I just call it the Monopoly tree, right? I don't know if you can see that. And you know, there's things that are just the power structure, the monopolization of, you know, the resources, the public utilities, the, you know, the banking system, the idea syndicate that I call the universities at this point, right? The funding, the public-private partnership, it's all spitting out whatever the money wants. Okay. I say we have the best ideas and money can buy, which isn't very good, right? I mean, they're buying whatever they want in the system. And so you have like an idea syndicate, you have idea bullying, right? Because the more money you have, so we have this violent aggregate of money that if you, you know, have you ever read Giants by, oh God, the last name's Phillips, I think. He's a Sonoma State University professor, but he basically goes over like everybody in the world has public relations departments. You know what I mean? Like the army has it, and the, you know, all the government agencies and all the big companies and all the NGOs and the, you know, nonprofit organizations. And I mean, literally everybody but us, you know, selling their message into this, you know, the ether. Right. And so, astronomical amount of money. And so, you know, when you take the Jenga blocks, when you start to take the Jenga blocks out from the bottom, you know what I'm talking about? That game? Okay. It's all structured. It's all built around, you know, these big monopoly blocks. You see what I'm saying? And it's like, okay, you can go a different way. I mean, this is the reality. My motto for the year is true hope begins when illusions end. Okay. And it's really important. Like a friend of mine, he was really enamored with the crash in the Andes, that airplane that crashed in 1972. And those people had patched together the radio, made it work. And they were listening online when they heard the words, "The search has been called off." Right. Which would be the worst thing that you would want to ever hear. Right. Okay. That's unplugging all the illusions that you're just going to get saved. Somebody's going to bring a helicopter down and you're out of there. Okay. But it's probably saved their life to hear the worst, because now they go, "Oh my God, it's just us." And they have to do something. Well, they ended up having, you know, doing cannibalism. Right. But they ended up getting out. They walked out and got to some post or something like that. But, you know, the idea is that, you know, you got all these illusions that this is going to save you, or this is going to come through, or that's going to, you know what I mean? You have to really face the facts. And it's tough. And that's why I'm saying these monopoly, this structure is all built on top of each other. You know what I mean? That, you know, the dollar system, all the pensions, and you know what I mean? If you want to divorce yourself a little bit from the system, it's not happening with the system maintaining its integrity. And so
no.
It's collapsing, whether we collapse it first or they collapse it.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's all just sort of a race to the bottom, unfortunately. And that's all you can do is just sort of arm yourself with the information and the tools to know when the worst of it is coming. Because there's no real way to know. That's the truth of it, is that there's nothing you can do. No bit of one piece of information that's going to solve it or protect you from any of it. It's a greater knowledge and understanding and hopefully, you know, getting along with individual communities. There's so much more, and unfortunately, we're out of time. That hour is gone. We burned that bad boy. We may have to do it again. We'll just continue at part two sometime. Really great getting to chat with you. I do wish that we did have more time, but
like I say, I got book two coming out.
What's that?
I got book two coming out shortly. Yeah. So and when that's out, you know, we can, you know,
do
maybe you can take a look at that book, and say, okay, let's chat about that.
Well, and then, you know, maybe I can get a read in on the first one before we get there, and maybe I'll have some thoughts for you. I imagine, listen, just chatting with you, I think that it's amazing what you're doing, and I hope that it really works out, and I hope you continue to get everything in line so that you can drop the books, the rest of the books, and get the information out there, because I think you're on a path. There's so many different angles, right, that we can try to approach this thing from. We can talk about how bad this is, or how different that thing is, or what it could be if we were going to do this. But breaking through the propaganda is one of those core things. It's like the understanding.
Yeah, it is, because the blinders really come off. So like my second book is really pulling on the strings of like who is using these selling arts that rise up in the 1800s. Who's using them and for what reason? And all I'm doing is getting historical people, you know, books, you know, none of this is, you know, I mean, it's on the record, right? And we don't know the history, because nobody's, you know, like people think, first of all, they think American propaganda is an oxymoron, you know, for most of the time, you know, from the World War II, right? The enemies did it, we didn't. Okay, but that's absolutely not true. And so, you know, taking it back so that we can see its rise in our country, and our eyes start to be open, because we're historically educated, you know, which I wasn't either. So, I mean, you know, the schools isn't meant to give us that, you know?
Yeah, so. We all have to start somewhere. Michelle Stiles, thank you so much. SmartSheep.com, that's where you find out more about Michelle. And the rest of you, we will catch up with you next time.
Okay. Thanks. We'll see you, Mike.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy.